Grab your popcorn and goobers. It's time for Motherhood in Hollywood with your host, Heather Brooker. This is a crude prude's perspective on being a full-time mom in showbiz. She's not a perfect mom, but she can play one on TV. Hold on to your butts. Here's Heather.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 8 of Motherhood in Hollywood. I'm Heather. Welcome. Thanks for joining us. If this is your first time, where the hell have you been? This is episode 8. If you've been listening all along, then, oh my God, I love you so much. Thank you. Oh my God, you're the best. I'm having a lot of fun doing this podcast, so I really hope you guys are enjoying listening to it as well, listening to me ramble on every week with all the cool people that I get to talk to. This week is definitely no exception. We've got Daisy Egan on the show, and I'll tell you a little bit more about her in a second. But before we get started, I want to give a quick shout out to a couple of the people who have joined me over on Facebook, at the Motherhood in Hollywood Facebook page. I want to say hello and welcome to Donna Bard and Tanya Hendricks. Also, Rebecca Critchlow. I hope I'm saying your name right. Thanks so much, you guys, for finding the Motherhood in Hollywood Facebook page. And I hope you're enjoying the content that we're putting over there. Also want to give a quick shout out to a few of our new Twitter followers. Catherine McCord, that might sound familiar to you. She is the creator and an author. She does Weelicious, which is, if you don't know, if you're a mom, it has some amazing, she gives you amazing recipes for your kids at any age. They're healthy, they're easy to make, from baby food all the way up through toddler food. And she shows really great videos as well, how to make those. So hi, Catherine. Thanks for joining me over on the Twitter. Brittany Parker also on Twitter, and Jessica Turner, who is a mom and author as well. And a lot of other podcasters hooking up with us on the social media as well. I appreciate that. And, you know, actually, I struggle a little bit with social media. I don't know about you guys, but it seems like there's so many social media outlets, it can be a little overwhelming. There's Instagram, there's Tumblr, there's Pinterest, there's Twitter, Facebook, obviously, and there's a new one that I'm just learning about called Periscope. And it's all a little much to take on, I'm finding, because you want to stay social, you want to stay out there and, like, you know, let people know. Like, I put a lot of work into this podcast. I do it all by myself from my house office, from my home office, and I love it. And I want to make sure people are able to find it and hear about it and discover it, because I know some amazing people. I'm getting to meet some amazing people, and I want to share them with everybody. So I've been struggling, like, trying to figure out how to get the word out there socially. And I have a friend named Brian. He owns Pineapple Advertising, and he's kind of known as the pineapple guy, if you will. Total expert in business and marketing, and just knows his shit when it comes to social media and, like, branding and that sort of thing. So I called him up and I was like, hey, help me out, because I'm feeling a little overwhelmed. I'm feeling a little bit lost. And he was a wealth of information. He has such a unique perspective, and actually it's really a fresh perspective on marketing and advertising and working your way, yourself into the social media market. And yeah, he just does a great job with that. So I just want to say thank you. And if you need help with any of that, if you or your business is struggling, if your business is slowing down, or you just want some fresh perspective on how to market whatever it is you're doing, market your career, your business, give Brian a call. Go to pickthepineapple.com and ask for Brian Barlow over there at Pineapple Advertising, and tell him Heather from Motherhood in Hollywood sent you, and I promise he'll take good care of you. Brian's a really good guy, and I've known him for a really long time, so check it out, you guys. So that being said, thank you again to everyone who's following us on Twitter and on Facebook and Instagram. I see you. I know what you're doing, because then I follow you back. Okay, so I want to stop being a dork for just a minute and talk a little bit about my guest today. My guest, you guys, for real, we've hit the jackpot here. It's Daisy Egan. And if it sounds familiar to some of you, it's because she is the youngest actress ever to win a Tony Award. Holy F. When this woman was a little girl, when she was 11 years old, winning a Tony, I was like bummed about not making junior varsity cheerleader. You know, like, just to put things in perspective for you, I was 11 and I was sad that I didn't make the cheerleading squad. She was 11 and she won a freaking Tony. And to hear her talk about her life since then, what changed in her life, she's a mother now. She has a little boy named Monty who is just a doll. And she has a really incredible story to tell, but she's also really funny and she's really grounded and she has very strong viewpoints when it comes to women's rights and feminism and things like that. So this is a really great look inside someone else's life who has, man, she's been through a lot and she's so strong because of it. And she also just moved to New York, which makes me really sad because now we can't really hang out anymore. But that's okay. We'll still Skype and chat whenever we can. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this interview with Tony Award-winning actress Daisy Egan. Pretty good. I like it. All right, you guys, I'm joined today by Broadway legend. See, I picked my own title for you. Broadway legend, Daisy Egan. But I think, more importantly, you're a fellow mom.
I am.
And that's so exciting to me. I've literally been bugging Daisy for months to come and be on my show.
It has not felt like bugging.
Okay, good.
No.
Because you have such a great story to tell. And I love what you're doing with your acting career, with your mommyhood, with your feminist, like, you know, causes. Mm-hmm. You're taking up arms kind of mm-hmm. a thing. So I feel like we have a lot to cover.
Sure, yeah.
Before my toddler comes barging into the room.
Yeah, and ruins everything.
And ruins everything. God, kids. Like they do.
They do. Just
jerks.
They really are.
Right now, we are placating her with a little bit of Fox and the Hound and some snacks.
So. Monty, at this point in the day, would probably be watching Dinosaur Train.
Oh my God, we love Dinosaur Train.
Unless he'd already watched Sesame Street, because we try to, like, you know, let's take it easy on the television.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings about it. When she was little, I didn't do a whole lot of TV. At least I feel like I didn't put her in front of a whole lot of TV. Mm-hmm. I watched a lot of TV.
Yeah.
Which is sort of the same thing. But, I mean, I've had mom friends who are like, if their kids are within 100 yards of a TV, they lose their shit and be like, and they're like, no TV. And
it's anything when it comes to parenting mm-hmm. on either extreme, like, you're doing too much.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Totally.
I met a dad at the park who we were walking back from the park and we saw a blimp in the sky, obviously mm-hmm. in the sky, not like just like on Wilton
on
Place.
The sidewalk. Yeah.
And it had a screen. You know, okay. It had like an LED, like, you know, tonight the Lakers are playing. Enjoy Goodyear tires, whatever.
Uh-huh.
And the guy literally was like, oh, she hasn't had any screen time yet. Mm. I was like, dude.
Are you serious?
Come on now.
That's extreme.
And I think.
I hope you made fun of him relentlessly.
Not to his face.
Oh.
I think they were two at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, look, I respect that you don't want to do screen time.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a blimp in the sky.
I think, though, a lot of parents don't have, I don't know. Everybody's trying so hard to do the right thing.
Yes.
That everyone's version of what the right thing is slightly different. Just like we can all see a car accident and have five different versions of what happened.
Right.
You know?
Oh, absolutely.
Everyone reads parenting tips and they all have five different versions on what that means
for them. Yeah, because it goes into your own computer brain mm-hmm. and you have to process it based on like all of your experiences.
Right, right.
And then it's going to come out however it comes out.
Right. Now tell me a little bit about Monty. He's almost 2.5.
Yeah, he'll be 2.5 in November.
Ooh.
And he's incredible.
He's a ginge.
He is a ginger.
I love
which
that.
Was I was shocked.
Because you don't have red hair. Who is
I don't.
In your family?
Kurt had red. Monty's dad had red hair when he was a kid.
Daddy, it's fine.
Baby daddy. My baby daddy had red hair when he was a kid. But when Monty came out with red hair, I mean, I was shocked.
Really?
Yeah. I said to Kurt, who else have you been sleeping with?
Oh.
And then he had to explain how babies are made
right,
to me.
Right, right, right.
And I was like, oh, that's my bad. Yeah, he's so gorgeous.
He's so gorgeous. And I mean, just a sweetheart, too. Yeah. He and Channing had a play date. There's a really great museum here in L.A. called the Zimmer. And they have a children's museum there. And they had so much fun. That is a great place.
I know.
I'm so mad I hadn't been there before.
We switched it out this year. We decided to join the Museum of Natural History instead. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter anyway because we're moving away. But I think I would have... In retrospect, I should have stayed with the Zimmer because it's more age appropriate.
Yeah.
There's more stuff to do. I mean, there's less for the parents to do.
Yeah.
But it's still so engaging for them.
Oh my gosh, just so much. Yeah. Now, you mentioned that you're moving, which also, I have to say, makes me a little sad because I feel like I just got to know you. Like, Daisy and I have a mutual friend named Cassie Oates.
Yes.
And the first time I met you was like a year and a half ago at a commercial audition, and mm-hmm. I had to take Channing with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked in, and your eyes lit up, and I was like, oh my God, she's going to compliment my baby. It's fine. I get that all the time. But you came up, and you were like, how are you able to bring your baby to an audition? And I was like, I don't know. I probably shouldn't.
No, it was so great.
It was just one of those situations where I didn't have anyone to watch her, and I had no choice.
Oh, that's one. I mean, as you mentioned in your introduction to me, I have like a lot of, mm-hmm. you know, feminist, you know, ideals. And mm-hmm. that's a big thing for me is like women are stymied in terms of work a lot of times because of lack of childcare.
Mm-hmm.
And F, man, if you need to bring your kid to a commercial audition, bring your kid.
Do you find you're hesitant to take Monty if you don't have other options? Have you ever had to take him?
I have taken him. About 2 months after he was born, I booked a terrible, terrible television gig.
Oh,
it was bad. And I took him to set with me, and mm-hmm. I brought a friend who like acted as his sort of on-set nanny.
Oh,
but
that's nice. It's very Hollywood of you.
It was. It was really Hollywood.
It's a big moment.
Yeah, and like on break, I was like pumping in the green room.
That's real. But that's real life. I mean, that's not like... You know, your Reese Witherspoons, your legs are, who are the big moms right now? Olivia Wilde probably has like five nannies or something.
Yeah.
Like, that's not how most actresses are in Hollywood. Most of us are pumping, mm-hmm. Worrying that we're going to be leaking during an audition, trying to figure out what we're going to do if we get a last minute call to go to Santa Monica. So there's a lot of that happening. And
it's really hard.
It's really hard. Yeah.
It's hard. And if you add into that, like, all of the hormones that are at play and for me, so backtracking a little bit, I never wanted to have kids. I wasn't interested. I wasn't particularly fond of children.
Who is?
Yeah. Well, the Duggars.
Oh yeah,
are oof. In a lot God. Of different ways. Oh,
oh my God,
that's terrible.
So many
gross.
Oh, there's so many inferences.
I know. It's so funny just now that we're on the Duggars. I've never watched.
Now that you brought up the Duggars.
Now that I'm on the Duggars, I've literally never watched that show.
No.
Because you know, I have no interest, and B, like, even though I don't have a Nielsen box, like, I just don't want
you
to want to
add to that
support anything that has to do with
that. I've been calling
that.
Them the Duggars. That's how little I know
about
them.
Oh, well, there you go. Good.
I don't even know how they pronounce their name.
All I can think about when I think of that family is that Monty Python, the bit in Search for the Meaning of Life,
mm-hmm.
Or Monty Python and the Meaning of Life, where it's the Catholic woman and she's just like basically just like pooping out kids. And the song is called Every Sperm is Sacred.
Yes, every sperm is sacred. Oh, I love it. Yeah.
So anyway, with the Duggars, I kept thinking, like, statistically speaking, at least one of those kids is going to end up like
a murderer.
A
rapist.
A rapist, like a serious drug addict in prison, in a hospital. Like, just statistically speaking,
right.
We've got 20 kids or however many kids.
I think there's 19.
One in four people in this country suffer from mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and then before, and I was thinking this was going to be like down the line.
Yeah.
And then next thing you know, already
there he is, Chester Molester.
Yeah.
Isn't he the oldest kid? Or
I don't know.
I think he's like the oldest boy.
I don't know. Anyway, I mean, that's what comes of like.
Gross story.
Teaching kids that your body is gross and, you know, and forbidden and.
Yeah.
putting a lot of shame on it.
Yeah. I will shame my daughter if she's being slutty. I'm just going to throw that out there, Daisy. I'm going to be like, stop it.
What? Well, what's your definition of slutty?
Whatever hits me at the moment. Are those shorts slutty? That's slutty. Stop it. Take those off. No, I won't do that. I just wanted to see. Daisy's face went like white. Like
I'm not going to tell you how to parent, but please don't
do
that.
You can, but I will edit it out.
I remember once my stepmother, I got sexually harassed and I was wearing like, you know, a see-through top or whatever with a bra. And she said, what do you expect?
I like
you
like with a bra.
With a bra.
What do you expect?
Yeah, what do you expect? Anyway. So I didn't like children and my boyfriend and I had broken up. Uh-huh. But I hadn't moved out yet because I'd been traveling back and forth to New York working a lot.
Right.
I didn't need to move out. There wasn't any kind of urgency. And then I found out I was 10 and a half weeks pregnant.
No.
Yeah. And actually yesterday was the 3-year anniversary of
finding out that you were pregnant.
No, of the conception of the wee one.
You have it marked down?
We know when it happened. Yeah. Cause when the doctor estimated how far along I was, she was like, this is probably when you conceived. And I knew for sure. I was
like,
oh, right.
This was when you got me drunk and took me out for churros.
Exactly. We went to see Liza at the Hollywood Bowl. And the show was delayed because of sound problems.
I almost just spit coffee everywhere. That's so like, that is like the gayest story ever.
Oh, yeah. It was gay.
And like,
we drank a ton of Chardonnay. We sat next to these fabulous men.
I love it so much.
Who shared their Chardonnay with us after we'd finished our bottle. And we went up that night. We went up the two to watch the meteor showers, which happen every year at this time.
Yeah.
And then the next morning, we went out to see my friend's show, and we were getting ready beforehand. And anyway, then Monty was made.
So a little romancy-mancy.
A little bit. I wouldn't call it romance. But
the morning after?
Yeah.
You were drinking?
Yes.
Oh my God. I'm just like, get off me.
Oh, I was basically. I was like, fine, just do your thing and just hurry up.
And then he
basically
duggered you, is what you're saying.
Yes, exactly.
He duggered you. That's horrible.
I got duggered hard.
This podcast is going down.
And I think I'd like just started back on the pill. That was the first night I was going back on the pill after like 6 months off, because I'd been on it for so long that I was like, I'm gonna give my body a break.
Sure.
So anyway, we had like a very short period of time to figure out what we were gonna do.
Yeah.
And
was it an option to not have the baby?
Yeah,
that was something you were discussing.
Yeah.
Okay,
that was the first thought. We were like, okay, well, obviously we're not gonna do this is bonkers.
Was it because you guys were broken up, or was it because you just were like, I don't know that I want to?
Yeah, it was a multiplicity of factors. It was like, I don't really want a kid. I've never wanted a kid. We're broken up. How would we do this? We can't afford to do this. Do I want to do this alone? Like all that stuff. So we had like a big fight, and Kurt had a very typical, you know,
male response,
which was like, I can't do this. This is too scary. Blah. Mm-hmm. And I went off to a hotel for a few nights, and he picked me up on Sunday, and we went and had brunch and decided like, all right, let's do this. Let's make it work.
Okay.
And it was, you know, top three best decisions I've ever made.
Yeah, I was going to say, so yeah. Looking back now, is it like, I mean, nobody ever wants to say, oh, I regret making this choice, but it is such a big decision, and it is a permanent, lifelong.
Yeah,
you know.
I mean, I will say there are days where I'm like, ugh, I don't want to listen to the
right
wheels
now.
On the bus.
Yeah.
Again, I want to go
drink,
you
with
know,
my friends.
Whatever it is,
smoke
right, TV. And you know what I mean. But no, I see Monty as like, I'm not religious. I don't have any like belief. I mean, I guess I sort of believe in like a higher something or other. But anyway. In some ways, I feel like he has given me a clean slate. So for like all those years that I were like beat myself up for things that I did when I was younger, or choices that I made that I felt bad about, or whatever it was, I'm now able to say like, I had to do everything in my life exactly the way I did it. My life had to happen exactly the way it happened in order for me to get this kid.
Point. Yeah.
Absolutely. And so everything, my mom dying, me getting married and then divorced, like everything, big giant shows that I turned down for like weird reasons, everything had to happen that way. So it gives me a lot of gratitude.
Yeah.
Which I didn't have a lot of before.
Sure. It's also it's humbling. Yes. Along with gratitude comes a little bit of humility. Yeah. My mom used to harass Chris and I for years and years because we were married for 10 years.
Oh, wow.
Almost 11 before we decided to have kids.
Oh, wow. Were you just like not going to?
No. Yeah. We were not fans
of
children. We just loved like our lives. We loved being able to pack up and go to Vegas or mm-hmm. Napa or, you know, wherever we wanted.
2 a.m. you can be like, I feel like waffles.
Yeah. And just mm-hmm. go do it. I mean, it was already, we had a dog and a cat. It was already like mm-hmm. such a hassle to try to find someone to watch them. We were like, could you imagine with a baby?
Yeah.
So we just were not feeling it. And my mom for years was just like, why don't you have a baby? Why don't you have a baby? And then when we decided to have Channing, and it was just total game changer, total like eye opener for me in terms of like, how I lived before versus, because there, I think there is for a lot of moms like a pre-baby, post-baby shift in your attitude and, you know, psyche for sure. And my mom says to me all the time now, don't you wish you had her sooner? Don't you see now what you've been missing out on?
I wouldn't have had her.
I know. And that's what I say. I'm like, Mom, I would not have had this baby at this time. It would have been a different egg, a different sperm, all of that. And I would not have had this perfect, wonderful child.
Yeah.
And like, so no, everything was exactly the way it was supposed to be. Like, yes, do I have regrets? Absolutely. But everything mm-hmm. worked out the way it was supposed to.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that we waited.
Yeah.
Because we were not ready. In our 20s, no way.
Oh, God.
I would have like, I don't want to say how old I am. I just realized like nobody knows that I'm only 25. But anyway, so I think about that a lot too.
I honestly don't think that anyone should be allowed to make any massive life decision until they're like 30.
Until they're 30, yeah.
No kids, no marriage, no tattoos, no buying of property.
No tattoos. Oh boy, I'm in trouble.
Oh yeah, I mean, I would get every single one of mine removed now.
My best friend from back home, Teresa, she got married when she was, I think, 19 or 20. And couldn't drink at her own wedding. Ugh. And now she has 5 kids. But she's so happy. Like, well, I can't even, good. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, that was not my path.
No.
That was
I got
for
married
me,
at 23. And ooh, when I look young. Back, I was a baby.
Yeah.
And I thought I was a grown up.
Yeah.
And my head was jammed so far up my own butt at that point in my life.
Isn't that funny? Do you think that 20 years from now we'll look back and be like, remember when we were in our 30s and we and our heads were so far up our butt, we didn't know what we were doing?
I don't think it's as much mm-hmm. because I really do think like developmentally there's stuff that goes on in your brain. I mean, your brain's not finished developing until you're like mid to late 20s.
Yeah.
Literally, scientifically, your brain is not finished developing. And so I think like your 20s are for becoming who you're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, lots of people do it and they're perfectly happy.
Sure.
But for me, just marriage was not the right thing. And I certainly would not have been a good mother. I mean, maybe I would have, but it's not.
You're happy with your
I'm very happy.
Path.
Mm-hmm.
So I was saying we met at the audition initially and then, I think I followed you on Twitter or something. Thank God for Twitter.
Yes.
Everyone go to Twitter right now and follow us both immediately. Then we met up again or I ran into you again in a writing class that we took earlier this year. I know why I took the class. I took it because I feel like I have so many ideas, but I don't have the tools to sit down and write what I want to write. And that was a huge fear of mine, is that I was going to write something, but it would be wrong and it would look sloppy and unprofessional and I couldn't ever submit it to anybody. And it
so
was a
why
huge
did you,
stumbling block
for me. Because the class that we took was a spec.
The spec writing class with Ed Lee.
So how come you took that instead of like the pilot writing class?
Because I felt like, well, first of all, that was the one that was being offered, I think, next. But also, I think I just wanted to know what is happening in a writer's room. Like, I know I can come up with ideas,
right?
But I wanted to know a little bit more about the process of writing a day-to-day or week-to-week show.
Well, that's what's so unfair about having to have pilots in your portfolio, because you are writing them by yourself. If you're lucky, you have a partner, like a writing partner, but it doesn't reflect the reality of what goes on, because what goes on is that the whole room comes up with ideas.
There's like 10 or 12 people.
Right. Sometimes. The whole room beats out the show. The whole room, you know, and then you go outline it. But like, when you're doing it by yourself,
it's horrible.
Ugh.
It's so hard because you're questioning everything.
Yes.
You're like, does this make sense? I mean, my husband is my biggest litmus test. I have him read everything that I write. And he's so great and encouraging. And like, he'll be like, this is great. I really love this. And I'm like, thank you.
Yeah.
Like, I love that he's so encouraging, but I need a critical eye.
Yeah.
Who is familiar with the industry and, you know, who can.
Well, it's interesting because my writing mentor wrote on the show that I decided to spec. And I got a lot of flack online because I hate the internet.
Yeah.
I do too. There are really times where I'm like, man, the world was better before. I mean, the world was also worse, but, you know.
Well, the internet gives people license to think that their opinions matter.
Yes. Yeah.
And that they can just say whatever they want to whoever they want behind their computers.
I went onto the LA Writers Facebook forum that our teacher, Ed, was like, you have to go on this thing. And I said, like, hey, does anybody know what to do if, the template for About a Boy was totally different.
And that was your spec that you were writing, was About a Boy.
It was totally different from the templates of most other half hour single camera shows. Mm-hmm. So I was like, what do I do?
What do you mean? It was like different in terms of
literally
the
like
the fonts
and the margins were different.
Mm-hmm.
And my question was, is the person who's going to be reading this spec, are they going to be familiar enough with everything that they'll know, like, okay, this is the About a Boy template, or are they going to look at it and go, she doesn't know what she's doing because this template is different than the ones that everybody uses.
Right.
So I went on and I asked that question, and a few people got on my case for writing a spec for About a Boy because it was on the bubble. It might get canceled. And I was like,
That's
not the question I'm asking.
Dummies.
And then I got flack for being snotty.
Course.
And then somebody insulted me for having won a Tony when I was a kid. And I was like, okay, literally all I asked was about a script template.
What's wrong with people?
That's it. This guy was like, yeah, I'm really sure I want to read a script from a former child. And I was like, okay.
Was your name on your handle or something?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So anyway, my friend was a writer on About a Boy, and I love her. She's great. She writes on a lot of shows. She's extremely talented. She's wonderful. She's sweet. But I sent her my pilot, and she was like, I love this. This is wonderful. This is awesome. And then I sent it to a friend of mine who's lower down in the chain on, network television or cable television. And she was like, well, here's what needs to be fixed structure-wise. And I was like, why didn't my mentor...
Maybe she didn't want to hurt your feelings.
I don't care about
my
feelings.
It's so hard to, I know, but see, other people might. It may just be like, you know, was one of them a man and one of them a woman?
No, they're both women. And then on the opposite side of that, for my spec, which was the show she wrote on, Ed was like, this is great, blah, blah, blah. And then when I showed it to my writing mentor, she was like, this is good, but here's the structure stuff you need to fix. And I was like, wait a minute.
Was it different than what Ed was saying to
you?
You know, writing is so subjective.
Yeah.
Everything creative basically is subjective. Art, theater, you know, all of it. And that's why, you know, I talked to my friend Rich Keith a couple of weeks ago. He was on the show, and I was talking to him about having a writing partner. And I think that sometimes those are like the best relationships in LA, because you've got that other person who is giving you their opinions and their thoughts, but also like has a different perspective, and you guys can find a happy, you know, balance together.
But a lot of people say that their writing partner, that they're closer to their writing partner than
their
are.
Spouse.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what Rich was saying, but his wife was here. So he was like, I mean, I love you. I mean, it was awkward. But yeah, I mean, I took that class too because I just didn't know how to get started. Mm-hmm. And I also just really felt like I needed to have a fire lit under me to be like, I can do this.
Yeah.
And in the process of taking that writing class, I realized I don't know if I can.
Really?
I don't know if I can. I felt like I was so far off from what I had envisioned. And I have not revisited it since. And I'm really mad at myself for not doing that. But
well, first of all, stop it. But second of all, that's really interesting because I thought that you and Stephanie and I, frankly, were the strongest writers in that class.
Oh, for sure. Oh, yeah. Your stuff was on point. You totally got the voice of the show. And
yeah, I felt that way about you.
Oh, Stephanie's so cute.
Yeah, it was.
She did this Marry Me spec. Stephanie Drake, who is on Mad Men. Yeah. I hope she'll come on the show, too. I need to ask her.
I bet
her.
She will. Although she's not a mom.
It doesn't matter. You don't have to be a mom. Oh, okay. My friend Rich wasn't
a mom. Oh, right. He's not a mom.
The motherhood part of Motherhood in Hollywood is me. I'm the motherhood.
Okay.
But I also want to highlight all my other moms.
Good.
My mom friends as well.
But yeah, I bet Stephanie will come on.
Yeah.
I thought her Marry Me script was great.
Great.
And you did the Mindy Project.
Yeah, I did Mindy Project. I had such a fondness for those characters.
Yeah.
I love the voice. I love that Mindy is doing something different where she's sort of the awkward, weird girl who, I don't want to say she looks awkward and weird, but she doesn't look like everybody
else. She sure doesn't fit the mold. Yeah.
And that's what I love about it. I'm not saying I want every show to be like, look, I'm sorry, but Zooey Deschanel is not awkward and weird. Can we just stop pretending that because we put glasses on her that she's
I'm
not,
a nerd.
That she's a no, nerd and that she's not gorgeous and funny and like smart. Yeah,
I'm not a big fan of Mindy's show. And I'm upset that
I'm surprised. Like it's so women empowerment. She's a woman. She's a doctor.
It's just that she. I love what she's doing. Mm-hmm. I have an incredible respect for what she's doing.
Yeah,
and I think it's great. Mm-hmm. I just the show itself doesn't really appeal to me and. Sure. I don't like the fact that she got rid of a lot of the female characters right quick.
Yeah.
In
the beginning.
Yeah. And I don't know really, and it's not really fair for me to speculate.
Yeah.
But I do have a feeling that she was like, I want to be.
Like the star of the show, right? So, you know, that reminds me, you actually have very specific and very strong feelings about women in culture and women's sexuality. And feminism is a huge part of your life, right?
Yeah. So the aesthetics of our culture, like the preferences that we have or whatever we think the ideal of like sexuality or beauty is comes, It's a product of our culture and we live in it. So we can't it's hard to pull yourself out of it. So, so we think we're told like, this is what is sexy, right?
Right.
And so, and I fall into it too. Like, so then if I wear like a hot dress or whatever it is, it's like, I feel sexy because I am fitting the mold of what sexy is supposed to be. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but if you're defining your mold of what you think is sexy.
Right. But that's different. So then if I want to go out, like with the Riot Girls in the 90s, they were like, I'm going to wear my full butt underwear and this bra, and I'm going to write slut across my belly, and I'm going to wail into a mic and wail on my guitar because I think that's sexy.
Yeah.
Like that was an example of some women being like, Here's what I think is sexy.
Where do you think this comes from? Because you have such a strong feminist viewpoint. Where do you think that comes from?
I think it comes a lot from my mother. Mm-hmm. She was a huge. Well, it's funny. She was a radical feminist. She would consider herself a radical feminist. She was a women's health writer. She was a women's health advocate. She wrote the first like guidebook for teenage girls on like what it's like to be a teenage girl. And so she was very much into like, you know, the equal rights and pro-choice, and my sister and I were both raised in that culture.
Now, you mentioned a couple of times mm-hmm. that your mom passed away, but yeah. we didn't really touch on that.
Yeah, she died when I was 13. Mm-hmm. She had, ironically, she had colon cancer and found it way too late. So here she is being this women's health advocate and then completely ignoring her own health, because colon cancer is literally the easiest thing to take care of.
Oh, wow.
Even back then.
So she like didn't see the signs, or she just ignored the signs?
She hated going to the doctor. She distrusted Western medicine. Mm-hmm. And so she never went to really get her proper checkups.
Yeah.
So by the time they found it, it was too late.
Do you have like any resentment towards her because of that?
Again, I used to, mm-hmm. But I can't anymore, because again, it all had to happen that way. Sure. I have decided, instead of being resentful of it, I've decided to like learn from it. Mm-hmm. And so now I go get my colonoscopy every 5 years,
right.
you know, and I make sure that I'm okay, and I make sure that I'm healthy.
Cause your mom was really young.
To the extent that I can. Right. Yeah. She was 49.
Yeah.
There are things that, I'm like, I don't understand. Like she knew she was going to die. She knew when she was diagnosed, it was terminal. And she died, I guess, a year and a half after that. And she never like, she didn't like write me a letter or, you know what I mean? And
there was
that,
no like final goodbye or yeah, closure. Or
yeah. Anything. And I remember in the last few days that she was alive, like I remember her sitting on her bed at home reading The New Yorker. And, you know, God bless her. That's what she wanted to do with her time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I guess ever since I've had Monty, I've started thinking about, like, what must that be like mm-hmm. to know that you're going to die and you have a young child.
And you're never going to get to all of speak that to stuff. Them again. And
right.
You have, I feel like I have all of this stuff I want to impart onto her right. little impressionable mind, right. you know.
And so I'm kind of like, well, why didn't she leave me with anything like that? And then also, going back to where my feminism comes from. Mm-hmm. So it comes from being raised with those ideals and then also seeing the gaps in my mother's, you know, feminist theory and the way that she lived and wanting to do better.
Okay. You think that's sort of what's driving you in those terms?
Yeah, I think so. And I don't know. I mean, it's funny when a woman says she's not a feminist, it doesn't make any sense to me, because then don't go vote. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Don't go get a job.
Don't you think, though, that there are varying degrees of feminism?
Oh, sure. But there are women who will be like, no, I'm not a feminist.
Well, I think maybe because they don't understand
yeah.
the term. I mean, because a lot of women see feminism like what you just described, in granny panties and like slut across right. your shirt and like protesting or rioting in the
right.
street.
Feminazis,
right,
quote unquote.
Right, sure. I think that's what a lot of people perceive it to be. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of friends back home, like in Oklahoma, who mm-hmm. are just like, oh, feminist. Mm-hmm. It's not something I personally ever used to describe myself. Mm-hmm. However, if I look at how I think mm-hmm. about things and about the world and about how men treat women, how men treat me, mm-hmm. how I want my daughter treated, yeah. then I definitely have feminist tendencies.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Is that something I can have? I mean, I've got the tendency, like gay tendencies. I've got feminist tendencies yeah. as well. So I think every woman who is a strong woman mm-hmm. and who has, you know, at least this is just from my perspective, mm-hmm. who have strong opinions, who has, who is assertive, can have feminist thoughts and tendencies
sure.
and like feelings. And
I mean, I would call you a feminist, yeah. but if you don't call yourself a feminist, then
I don't
that's
call myself
okay.
a lot of things.
Yeah.
I don't. I know there's this big movement lately with like not labeling.
Yes.
Everyone's like, don't label me. I don't want a label. And I'm right. like, BT dubs, everyone and everything has a label.
Yeah.
Whether your name is Daisy.
Right.
That's a label.
Right.
That's your name. We sure. call you Daisy. You're a white woman.
Mm-hmm.
You are a feminist.
Mm-hmm.
Those are labels.
Right.
Even if I call you just a person, mm-hmm. that's a label.
Sure.
So everyone just stop with the, I don't want to be labeled. Yeah. We got to have some label. Like,
yeah.
They're pronouns. They're just pronouns and adjectives.
But you know, if a person rejects the pronoun that their, you know, gender mm-hmm. was given to them.
Well, gender, yeah. I mean, if you,
then that's fine.
If you don't want to be called a she and people keep right. calling you a she,
right.
absolutely say stop calling me that. Mm-hmm. But I just think that the whole movement against, because to me it's a movement against words. They're words that are used to describe the world in which we yes. live. And you cannot tell the entire world to stop using words.
Right.
Because there's a label for everything. This is a desk. Right. That's a label.
That's funny because I was just thinking about this yesterday. You know, when people are offended by whatever, by comments that Donald Trump makes yeah. or Amy Schumer or whatever, and they say, and then other people say, oh, get over it, it's just words. It's like, well, mm-hmm. words are all we have.
And they're powerful.
They're literally all we have.
But you can't take them away. You can't tell people not to use them. Yeah, I mean, that's the issue I have. If whether you're using them to be hurtful is a different story. Right. Whether you're using them to drag someone down or, you know, something like that, that's a slightly different conversation.
Right,
but
and
just
I don't
to say
think,
not to label, right. I hate that. I'm yeah. like, no, we have to. We have right. to use our words.
And the whole conversation that was happening, I guess, like a year or so ago about rape culture and like there is this big movement to try to get comedians to stop with the rape
jokes. About rapes.
And then people say like, you're stymieing me. We shouldn't ban words. It's like, we're not talking about banning words. Mm-hmm. We're not saying it should be illegal for you to make a rape joke. Mm-hmm. What we're saying is think better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Take a moment and let's use our critical thinking skills and think about the power structure in our culture and the privilege structure. And for you to be a person who doesn't have to leave the house worrying about their sexual safety, maybe it's not appropriate for you to then mock somebody who does have to worry about that.
Right, absolutely. I think, do you want to come in? You can come in. Can you sit real quiet? No. Okay. Chani's here. She's going to join us. You've also mentioned a couple of times about your Tony. Mm-hmm. And I think I briefly mentioned that when I introduced you, but you won a Tony Award when you were 11 years old mm-hmm. and you are still the record holder for the youngest actress to win a Tony.
Yes.
That's correct, right? Mm-hmm. What is that like for you? Because I know we've talked a little bit about your, you're still an actress and mm-hmm. you are still going out for auditions and TV and film, and mm-hmm. you also do a lot with theater and a lot of stage shows and things mm-hmm. like that. But I want to know what that's like for you to win a Tony at 11. Like, I think I was in high school, like, still trying to get cast, like, got mad at my drama teacher for not casting me in the lead of my school play, and you are freaking winning a Tony. That's just unbelievable to me.
Thank you.
I watched your speech online, by the way. I cried. I'm like, oh my God, she's so little.
I was very little.
Yeah.
I was very little.
You want to go hide? Okay, be real quiet because mommy is talking to Miss Daisy. Okay, can you be real quiet? You can stay in here. You want to sit in the chair? Okay. So what is that like for you? Is it, I mean, because it's really absolutely mind-blowing to me.
It's funny. It's obviously a huge part of my life. Mm-hmm. It's a huge part of my career and my identity as a person. And it played a big, and does continue to play a big role in like who I am and how I'm shaped and stuff.
Sure.
And I am extraordinarily grateful for the experience. Secret Garden, I think in a lot of ways saved my life. You know, my mom was very ill while I was doing that show. She was diagnosed 2 months after I won, or 3 months. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what would have happened to me if I hadn't been acting.
in terms of like...
I don't know how I would have coped.
What else you would have had to do with your life, like any other focus?
Yeah. I wasn't...
Because it happened. Your mom passed away just 2 years after you won that award.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like the acting industry saved your life, or do you feel like theater...
I'm not sure. I think in some ways just being in the Secret Garden saved my life. The fact that I was able to... I had somewhere to go every day after school that wasn't, you know, home where all the sickness was happening.
Sure.
Also, I was so horribly ostracized at school that also being in the theater helped me with that as well.
Why? Because you were a famous actress?
No. From before.
Oh.
I was short and I was loud and we didn't have a lot of money. I wore hand-me-downs. You know, my hair was always not in, like, rat's nest. And so theater was an outlet that I don't, if I hadn't had it, I just don't know. You know, I suffer from depression, which again, like, I don't know if it was because my mom got sick and died or from before that. But it's possible if it was before that, that it would have manifested younger and I wouldn't have. I just don't know what would have happened.
Right.
And because of theater and because of Secret Garden, I had, you know...
A purpose.
A purpose and a bigger family of support.
Yeah.
So in that regard, it's priceless. Also, you know, I never have to start at square one in terms of my career, which is great. There's always at least a foot in the door that I can get. There's some name recognition, which... can be a bad thing. Like, there are days where I'm like, I wish that I could just, like, change my name and, like, change my face and just go back and start from the beginning.
Yeah, what is that like for you? Because I can't imagine, you know, I started this career a little bit later in life. Like, I had been a reporter and an anchor for many years, but my heart, I always feel like, was in theater and was in acting. And I finally realized that a little bit later than I had when I wanted to. But I can't imagine at 11, like... reaching such a pinnacle and then you know at 11 what you want to do. Do you feel like you wanted to change your mind to do something else?
Oh yeah.
Or do you just sort of feel like, well, this is what I've been doing, it's just what I do now?
In my 20s, I really got to this point where I was like, I don't know if I want to do this anymore, and I don't know if it's because I don't want to do it or because I'm tired of doing it. I don't know if it's what I do just because it's what I do or if it's what I love to do. And then at that point, it was like I didn't know how to do anything else, or I thought I didn't know how to do anything else. Did you paint that so fast?
Yeah, Channing made a painting for Daisy.
Wow, that was fast. I thought that was going to take a lot longer.
Oh, no, don't put it on the wall.
Ooh.
Wet. Yeah, it's wet.
No, it's not wet.
Okay, can you go paint one more? Play more.
No.
Mommy's talking to Daisy right now, though, okay? So, shh. Yeah, she's a blessing.
Yes, I completely understand.
It's that what we were talking about a second ago before we started recording is that it's so hard as a mom now to divide your time between the
mothering
joys of motherhood
and creativity.
And doing the creative things that you kind of want to do for your career, like writing.
Yep.
You know, taking that writing class was a big part of me trying to light a fire to get writing again.
Yeah.
But I'm so drained at the end
of
the
day. I know, it's incredibly hard.
And it's, you know, sitting down to even just write a blog post. I'm like,
I know, this morning.
You have a pretty big blog, right? Pretty active.
Well,
blog?
I did. I haven't really written anything in like a year.
Yeah.
Because just life got too hard. When Monty was napping four times a day, it was easy. Now, you know, now it's completely different. And when he is napping, that's like the time to get stuff done,
like
or to like get 20 minute nap or whatever.
Yeah.
But I would like to be blogging about this experience because we're moving back to New York on Monday.
I'm so sad.
I know, I'm sad. I'm very sad about it.
Why? Where did this come from? I know we talked a little bit about more opportunities for you there, especially with your background in theater. Is that basically why you're doing it?
Yeah. I that's a large part of it. My boyfriend has been unemployed for a year. He got laid off a year ago, and he just has not been able to had find something else. Luck finding work out here. He worked for a production company for 15 years.
Wow.
And I don't know if it's that like loyalty doesn't mean anything anymore or like he's just not technologically.
I go hide. Okay.
Hide. And yeah, for me, you know, it hasn't worked out here in LA the way that I would have wanted it to. Mm-hmm. And I've been very philosophical about that lately because I'm very good at beating myself up and I'm very good at being like, I failed. And I have to remind myself that like just life goes the way life goes. And I've had some bad luck with representation. I've just had bad luck.
How long have you lived in LA?
12 and a half years.
Oh, okay.
A long time.
Yeah.
And I've just had some really bad reps out here. And I'm not going to blame it all on them. I've also sort of been a mess and not in a great place. And then when I was about 26 or 7, I decided I needed to get out. And I took a 4-year break from the business. I went back to school. I got like a regular job.
What was that like?
It was interesting. The job, the place that I worked was, you know, a discombobulated mess. But I liked having an office. I liked answering people's questions and emails and whatever, and I was a program coordinator for a master's program, and so I liked it.
Did you feel like you were missing out on something?
No, I didn't until the end of that, and then I was like, I started to do like little cabaret, like friends were like, hey, come sing in my cabaret, and at first I was like, I'm not doing that anymore.
Yeah.
And then I started to again, and I was like, oh, I remember this part of it.
Yeah.
I liked this part. And so I got back in, and then, you know, sort of quickly was like, oh, right, I forgot about the part
how
that I hated.
Or,
well,
or the
there's like
hate,
the part of it that I love, and then there's the business part of it that I don't love.
I think that's with everybody out here. Like,
the
performing is the part that most people love, but it's the part you get to do the least.
Yeah. And also, it's like when I got back in, it was suddenly like Twitter and Facebook, and you need to have a social media presence.
Yeah.
And how do you craft that? And what do you want to be on social media? And how much of your life do you want people to know?
Yeah. There's a fine line.
Yeah. And when I got back in, I started working right away, and things were really ramping up, and it looked like pilot season was going to be great. And then I was pregnant. And then I was really pregnant during pilot season, as you know, because you were too. So that, you know, sort of ended up being another roadblock. But again, it's like I've gotten to this place where I'm like, life happens the way it needs to happen, and I'm not going to fight it because it's going to take me where I need to be.
Yeah.
Wherever that is.
And do you think that New York will make a difference?
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, my community is there, and I am a theater actor at heart. And also, I think that the TV industry out there is very different than it is here.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot more room for people that aren't cookie cutter, you know? And
I've always looked at New York, though, as being just a theater town.
Not anymore.
I know that they're starting to get more productions and there's things that are popping up, but for me, New York was never an option because I'm not like a triple threat. I don't sing and dance.
Well,
and,
now there is a lot of TV production happening there. There's Girls, there's Orange is the New Black, there's The Good Wife, there's a lot of stuff happening there. Plus, nowadays, with putting yourself on tape, like, you know, plus Atlanta's not far, and Atlanta's where a lot of stuff is happening.
Hotline. I have a friend right now who's working like crazy because he got an Atlanta-based agent and is just booking everything.
I've had two friends move down there.
Yeah, that's
They're
what
like,
I did.
I'm just moving there because
there's so much work
Wait, who's
in
your
Atlanta.
Friend?
His name is Justice.
Oh, okay. My friend Eddie did the same thing.
No, he was. His agents were like, you're literally booking everything that's happening right now in Hotlanta. You got to go.
And my
Walking
agency
Dead,
actually has a
one.
Branch down there.
Yeah.
So I might just tell them like, hey, get me in on all of that.
You know, I love L.A.
Yeah.
My husband and I, we love it here. I can't see us ever moving, you know. It's obviously cost prohibitive and horrible
hard.
And all that. But I feel like I could work if I went to Atlanta.
Yeah.
I just don't know that I want to.
I love
everything about the community here in LA. I totally vibe with.
Yeah. Well, last fall we were actually very strongly considering moving to Raleigh.
North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of production there too.
There, well, and it's close to Atlanta, and it was voted the best city to raise a family in.
Yeah,
it's
got isn't that interesting how your perspective suddenly changes on that? When you have a kid, you're like, oh, now I would like to not be where next to the LAPD where they could possibly shoot shoot at
and
me.
And also
if I'm on
where like we're in a horrible drought and an earthquake is going to break us off into
my
the
water
sea.
Bill is unbelievable. Yeah. I use less water now than I've ever used in my whole life, and I'm paying double. I'm like, how does this happen?
Yeah,
I'm so mad. For those who don't know, California is in a major drought right now, and all of the water companies are putting major restrictions on the water bills, but they're also raising their rates because the water companies say, well, hey, we're losing money on this drought because
everyone's
conserving.
Well, and also it's the only way to get people to stop using so much.
It is, but I wrote a story on this. I work for a local news organization. I wrote a story about this, about how the heads of all of the utilities, the major water utilities, are like, hey, we've got to raise the rates because people are conserving so much that we're losing money.
Oh my God.
So it's like you may be making the best effort possible to help with the drought, but you're still going to be paying out the ass because the water companies need to make money.
And then people say water's free.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
No.
Look, you get free water right out of your tap. No, you don't.
Yeah, the drought issue.
Yeah. So there's a lot of I love LA. Yeah. I love the weather. I love the lifestyle. I feel like after 12 and a half years, I finally made like a community here. Yeah. Like I'm starting to really make connections, not business necessarily, just like people that I love and I want to do things with. But
now you're leaving.
My family is back in New York.
Yeah.
I think my career is back there. And I think now I've had time to like step away and sort of become a better person and a different person with a different perspective. And so I feel like I will have a different experience in New York than I had in my, you know, until I was 23 when I moved out here.
And now you get to take Monty with you.
Yes.
And that will be a whole new experience than the last time you were in New York too, because now you're a New Yorker with a kid.
Yeah. And I'm hoping not to live like right in Manhattan. Yeah. I want to live, you know, I mean, we can't afford Brooklyn, but maybe like Queens or something.
It's not funny. Like Brooklyn to me was always like in my mind seemed sketchy. But then last time we were there, it was like, what the? We went to Brooklyn Heights and it was very fabulous.
I grew up in Park Slope and I was born in Park Slope back before it really became gentrified. And especially in our end of the neighborhood, we were in the South Slope. My parents are still there, my dad and his wife. And it was like crack vials and, you know, liquor stores.
Oh,
And now it's Park Slope is the most expensive place to live, like, in the country.
It's crazy.
And there are people like Williamsburg, which you didn't go to. Mm-hmm. Red Hook, you did not go to. Bushwick and Brownsville, you didn't go there.
Because they were scary.
Yeah. And now they're, you know,
the places to be.
Yeah, there's like artisan, you know, mayonnaise shops.
I am a little sad that you're leaving. I'm not
very
gonna lie.
Sad that
because,
I'm leaving.
Because like, I know it will be good for you and I know that, you know, your career, but I feel like since we've just sort of reconnected and you have a child, you are one of the few people I know that has a child the same age as mine. It's hard in LA to meet other moms who are A, in the industry, but B, have kids and are normal.
I know. I'm like, damn it. I could easily like bring Monty here and then we could just like write.
Sure.
And they would entertain
each
other.
Yeah, but now you're leaving. You're fucking all that up, Daisy.
I'm completely fucking it up.
You can do it over Skype.
Once again, kids fuck everything.
Right. what can people expect to see from you, like, do you think in the next few years? Like, what do you think we will be hearing and seeing from Daisy?
Well,
what's on your agenda?
I would like to be writing more. I think, like, if somebody waved a magic wand and I had my dream job, I would be a staff writer. I don't know that I want to be a showrunner necessarily. Yeah. Maybe someday, but like, I just want to be on staff.
Yeah.
I want to be on staff with a show, maybe be on it.
Yeah.
But I'm less interested in being in front of the camera these days.
Because are you finding fulfillment with, like, because you've done one woman shows and you do your brunch show, which is, tell me about that really quick.
The Brunch of Shame. It's Daisy and Jordan's Brunch of Shame. She's my Jordan Kybernet. She's my comedy writer and my life wife. I'm platonically in love with her. And so we do this Sunday brunch show where we sing and we're completely inappropriate and talk about, you know, dirty things and not dirty things. And we get topics from the audience and we give bad advice to the audience and do pop quizzes. And it's so much fun.
That sounds like a blast.
It's so much fun.
And that will get moved to New York then?
I believe so. I think Jordan has the ability to come out here, out to New York fairly regularly. So I think we're going to try to find a venue there. We're also going to host an evening of James Bond songs at 54 Below on November 15th. I am looking forward to creating a lot of work.
Yeah.
A lot of projects. I'd like to join UCB in New York.
That reminds me, I just listened to this show with Kay Cannon. She's the writer of Pitch Perfect and Pitch Perfect 2. And she also was a staff writer on 30 Rock. She was doing improv and sketch at UCB in New York.
Yeah.
Became friends with, or I think she met Tina Fey actually in Chicago at Second City Chicago. And was not getting auditions in New York. She's a great story. I want to have her come on the show. But she was doing auditions in New York, wasn't getting anywhere. Nothing was happening with her career, but she had this great all-woman sketch show.
Yeah.
And she decided to take a writing class, a spec writing class, to learn, like, you know, well, maybe I'll write, kind of a thing. Kind of like we were thinking.
Right.
And while she was in the middle of that class, Tina Fey was hiring writers for 30 Rock. And she had mentioned to her, like, oh, I'm taking this class. And Tina Fey apparently said, send me what you've got. Yeah. And she's like, I'm just in the middle of this class. So she had to quickly, halfway through her sketch, her spec writing class, wrap up her spec, email it to Tina Fey. She had a couple of her friends look it over, but basically, like, send it to Tina Fey and had a couple meetings, and she was hired as a staff writer.
See,
on 30
I keep
Rock.
Hearing these stories.
Crazy,
I keep
right?
hearing these stories where writers are like, well, basically, I ran into an exec at a party and talked to them about blah, 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 and then they called me. But then everyone else says, like, it's impossible to get staffed.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but then how come every staff person is saying, like...
I don't think it's impossible. I think that if you're good and your stuff is good, people are going to want to work with you.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
My problem is...
And you're prepared. I'm not prepared.
My problem is that I can't figure out how to get people to...
To read your stuff?
To read my stuff. Mm. That's it. Like, even
Are you sleeping with them? I've heard that
I'm
helps.
Trying. Even getting, like... My writing mentor, I was like, would you mind passing my pilot on to your agent?
Yeah.
And she was like, my agent won't even read my stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm
That's
like,
such
well,
an
then
awkward
how do I get...
conversation.
It's terrible.
Yeah, but
and
you
I'm
have to.
Really bad at it.
Yeah. You have to ask, because if you don't ask, you're never going to get anyone to help you in this town. Like, you have to be like, hey, can you help me out? And if someone says no, you have to respect that.
I've also gotten a lot of, it seems to me I get a lot of people who are like, hey, man, let me know and I'll read your stuff. And then when it comes down to it, I'm like, hey, I have my thing. Will you read it? Yeah, I'm really slammed right now.
Oh.
And it's like, wait a minute.
You offer.
You're the
Yeah.
Now I feel.
Mm-hmm. I know. It's that it's very LA thing. Like, hey, let me know what you're working on.
Yeah.
Hey, send me a link to what you got.
Yeah. And then I won't read it.
And then I won't read it.
And then I'm going to tell you I'm too busy.
Yeah. Oh, LA, this business.
Oh, LA.
But that Kay Cannon story is fantastic to me. It was while she was in the writer's room of 30 Rock that somebody had a joke about an a cappella group. And she was like, is that a thing? And she became obsessed with it, started researching it, and then wrote the script for Pitch Perfect. Now, here's the difference, is that she was friends with
Tina Fey.
And, like, friends with Elizabeth Banks.
Well, that's like...
Which we are not.
Right. That's like... Did you watch Happy-ish on Showtime?
Uh-uh.
Ugh, it's terrific.
Happy-ish.
And it was written by Shalom Auschlander, who was a contributor on This American Life. And if you look at his IMDb, it's nothing. And then showrunner, exec producer, writer.
What?
On literally nothing. I don't mean like little piddly things. I mean nothing.
Oh, you got to go pee-pee? Oh boy, this is a running thing. Can you go pee pee in the potty? Okay. We are nailing pee peeing.
That's amazing.
We'll see, unless she pees on the floor, and then I'll take it back.
You know, happens to the best of us. So, yeah, there was literally nothing, and then
showrunner,
exec producer, blah, 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 wrote every episode. And I knew him from This American Life. So I was like, how the hell did the, and then I was like, oh, right. This American Life had a show on Showtime for a while. And he's, you know, he was on, he was a contributor, frequent contributor.
He probably just had something ready to go and gave it to the
right
people.
I think that he probably was like, hey, I have this idea for this thing. I'll write it. And then he, and then Ira was like, great, I'll show it to some people. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, here, let's help you finish it. And then he fucking got a show.
Wow. It's just.
But then I'm like, wait, I want to tone. Don't I know anybody?
Yeah, you do.
But it's
people.
Just, it's hard to get
people. You know
people.
People.
To reach
you
it.
Just have to reach out to them and maybe stay on them. I don't know. Like, I don't know what the key is. If I did, maybe I would be not sitting in my office right now talking, lamenting my lack of blogging skills and podcasting.
I know, but
skills.
You get to spend all this great time with Channing. So.
I do. And honestly, that's why I love doing this is because it allows me to be able to have awesome friends come over and like see my daughter pantsless. Channing just walked into the room with no pants on. Where's your pants?
I pee-pee pitch.
You pee-peed in your pants?
I pee-pee-peed. Pitchy.
Oh, okay. This is also becoming a running theme in my house where she's peeing on things. So, yeah.
All right.
I feel like, though, there is so much more I could talk to you about, and there's so much more I wanted to talk to you about. But I think I need to go clean up pee right now in the other room. So,
well, we could do a part two via Skype.
Totally. I would love to. Yeah. When you get set up and all that stuff in New York, we'll do an update and you let me know if things are
awesome.
If the grass is greener on the East Coast.
Well, it will be because we're not in a drought over there.
That's true. That's true.
I can't find a picture.
Oh, no.
Hey, Channing, I have to tell you something. A, you're adorable. Oh. B, you're beautiful. No, but seriously, you're adorable, and also you are really able to entertain yourself, which is incredible. And I just think you're a bad so
a bad what?
A bad a bad donkey. A's. You're a bad donkey.
Yeah. No, you can't touch a computer right now.
You have work to do? Monty says that. He takes his little mini computer and he goes, I'm doing work.
Yeah, I'm doing work. Like, she'll be like, Mama, work.
Yeah.
Mama, work whenever I'm in the office.
Oh, Channing, you are so awesome. And I think you're great. And you painted a picture. And you went pee-pee. And I think you're awesome.
Yay!
I just I don't want to intimidate everybody.
Yeah,
but I wrote that off the top of my head.
Wow, that was like straight up musical improv.
I know.
Can you? Oh, now she's doing it.
Awesome. Anything is a microphone. Just remember that.
Yeah, now she's.
Is she obsessed with Let It Go?
With her toothbrush? I don't know that she's obsessed. No, mommy's gonna say goodbye to Daisy really quick. Can you? Yeah, I know. We gotta say bye to Daisy. She's singing with the paintbrush that Daisy was just
Happy
using.
Happy birthday to him.
Happy birthday, everybody. No. Okay, so where can everybody find you on social media?
It's very difficult.
Yes.
It's Twitter at Daisy Egan. Mm-hmm. It's EAGAN. Mm-hmm. Facebook, I have a fan page, which I prefer people use rather than friending me.
Right, yeah.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to
go
find
hide.
You.
You go hide.
So Facebook, Instagram, Daisy page. Egan.
Yeah.
My my website is daisyegan.com. It's sort of under construction right now, but it's still there.
Yeah.
You know, just like give me some time with my blog. I'm going to get back to it, I promise. But yeah, that's where you can find
it. Yeah, everybody go online right now and keep up with Daisy and her New York adventures.
Oh, and just to brag, I also recently won an award from blogger.com.
I saw that.
Yeah.
I just discovered, since I'm just sort of getting into blogging and all that stuff, I just saw that conference like as it was happening.
It was
and
great.
I was like, oh, I would have loved to have gone to that.
Yeah.
What was the award you won?
I didn't get to go to as much of the conference as I wanted to, but I won an award for... it was called Experts Among Us, and I won in the impact category, and
oh,
it was
cool.
For a blog that I wrote in response to a review that Ben Brantley wrote, in which he used the phrase, she was asking for it. So I wrote a piece about that phrase and about how we really need to stop using that phrase.
She was asking for it.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Yeah, I love
pretty proud.
The blogging community, especially for women, and I guess they're called mommy bloggers, which I kind of
think
is
some of them.
Yeah, I think some of them are. Yeah, the women who tend to write about their kids.
Yes,
I don't like the phrase mommy bloggers, but yeah. Some people embrace it, so whatever. Is a huge community.
Huge.
Millions of women are out there, like, trying to get their voice heard.
Which is part of the reason why I stopped blogging. I just was like, oh, my God, there's so many. Who cares? Like, yeah. It's everybody.
It's everywhere.
But you know what? I think it's valuable. You know, I've got my own voice.
If it's valuable to you, like, yeah. If you're getting something out of it, then that means I think whoever's reading it will also get something out of it.
And like we said at the beginning, like, you know, everything, the information that we put in our brains gets processed our own unique way.
Yeah.
So how we talk about it is going to be unique and different. And so that's important.
And there's nothing I'm covering. Like, because I think I struggle with that too. There's nothing I'm putting on my blog that's particularly groundbreaking.
Right.
There's nothing in the podcast that I'm doing that's going to be like a big game changer.
Right.
But it's fun for me. I hope it's fun for my guests and for people who are listening. And so that's kind of why I'm doing it. And
you never know, like, you know, who's going to be affected by what.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah. I just hope people are enjoying it and getting a few laughs every now and then.
I'm proud and I'm impressed with you.
Thank you. I'm yeah, those are Daisy's shoes. Channing is pantsless and wearing Daisy's shoes right
it's
now.
It's sort of what I do all day. So you're on the right track.
Me too. You too.
Me too.
Well, thank you again for coming on the
Thanks
show,
so
Daisy.
Much. It was a lot of fun.
I appreciate it. So,
and congrats on the blog, too.
Thank you.
I mean, the podcast.
Thank you. So everybody, make sure you go to Twitter right now. Go to MIH Podcast as well as at Daisy Egan and follow us. We're also both on Instagram. And if you go to iTunes, make sure you review the show by September 15th because then you'll be entered to win our giveaway for an Honest Company Bath Time Bundle and the Motherhood in Hollywood tote bags. So you want to make sure you get in on that. Thanks so much for listening, you guys, and we'll see you next week.
I'm a
sugar dad. Right. Balls.